This is Robert Stark. I'm joined here today with Matt Forney.
Thank you for having me on the show again, Robert. A pleasure to be doing this with you again.
So what we'll be discussing to start off with is, well, you're writing for Tacky Mag's article, Solace in Santa Barbara. Is that your...
Yes.
How you started off with, you say, if America is an insane asylum, as Ezra Pound once quipped, it looks like the inmates are in full revolt.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, I don't even, I try not to pay too much attention to the news anymore because it's kind of noisy, but every day it seems like we've got some sort of story of insanity or something like this, you know. It's pretty obvious that we're in the last days of a sick society when people are picking up guns and shooting each other, like the Elliot Rodger case in this, the article you're referring to.
And that is the thing, I think people are, society is horrified. And rightfully so, people have a right to be horrified by the event, but people don't want to, like, acknowledge that society as a whole is pretty insane, too.
Yeah, it's the guarantist way that people tend to deal with this. I mean, we're seeing a bit of the Elliot Rodger case because feminists are trying to use it ideologically, but it's like, society in general is like, oh, they're just a lone madman. But we keep having these so-called lone madmen shooting up public places at the rate of, I don't know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 a year now. That's an awful lot of, and the rate's just been accelerating for about the past 20, 30 years now.
And, we show a while back at Postal.
Yeah, so going Postal's, for a thesis is that, the increasing of spree shootings in both schools and workplaces is due to, well, it began with Ronald Reagan's neoliberal privatization economic reforms in the 80s, which, you know, workplaces became more oppressive, pay was cut, economic inequality increased, and Ames was making the sort of long shot thesis that in many ways these are sort of like slave revolts, analogous to, say, Nat Turner revolting against a plantation back during the days of slavery. The atmosphere at America becomes so oppressive, you know, in many cases bullying is sanctioned by the administration, that basically when these are just you know, shooting people because in their minds that's the only way they can escape this oppressive environment.
And with Solace in Santa Barbara, it's more about the sort of fem tax on the manosphere, but I'll be totally honest, I'm tired of hearing all the bickering back and forth between like the feminists and the manosphere.
Yeah, I'm sick of it too, but it's like, When we have people like Caitlin Dewey of the Washington Post outright accusing people like me of having influenced Elliot Rodger and claiming that we're all like ideologically aligned, it's like, you know, I don't want to hit them, but when you punch me in the face, you know what, when someone punches you in the face, you have to respond. So.
Yeah, I see what you're, exactly. So, when we were discussing, Mark Ames, I did a Google search, Mark Rodgers, and Mark Ames has not actually written about Elliot Rodgers yet. How does his case tie in with his specific theories?
Well, I'd say that it was like, well, Elliot Rodgers is a bit different than usual spree shooters because on paper, Rodger had just about every surface, to your point. He has everything, you know, the average man or woman would want. He's kind of a Hollywood producer. He's wealthy. He has a certain, you know, he's in good shape, and he looks like, you know, he has connections, Hollywood connections. You know, of all this, apparently he was a virgin at age 22, because he was either so socially inept or just so plain weird that, you know, I would say this, that does play into his theory somewhat, in that, oppressed or was, you know, oppressed by life, and oppressed by, or at least he felt he was oppressed, and this was his way of acting out. This was his way of getting a revenge on the world that seemingly had forsaken him.
And well, Mark Ames, I mean, his focus was very much on economics. Even though Elliot Rodgers was from a wealthy background, I think it can be tough growing up. The combination of growing up around wealth but having a very low social status can be tough on someone.
Basically, if you read through Elliot Rodger's manifesto, you basically get this, you know, envy was like the defining, attitude defined his life. You know, he envies, every time he sees a girl, like, he envies the guy because he thinks that the guy has something he doesn't have. Or there are some, you know, I hate to try and make levity of this, but there's some kind of amusing segments in the memoir where he's talking about listening to his sister having sex with her Mexican boyfriend, and he's like envious of the boyfriend. It's like, so what you have here is low self-esteem in Elliot Rodger, but he's surrounded by all these wealthy, he's surrounded by the beautiful. And even though he has all these connections, he still feels like an outsider looking in, which I think was, you know, obviously in mind and influences Killings.
What we touched on is when we talked about the Mark Ames book, you said you came to the conclusion that you changed your mind that sexual frustration is not the cause of his feelings. Does Elliot rethink?
I would say somewhat. The thing is, the older I get, and the less confident I feel about certain things like this, you know, it's like, I'm sort of realizing how much I don't know. In this case, I'd say it would be a pretty direct case. But again, as I mentioned earlier, Elliot Rodge does not fit the typical spree shooter profile, because, like I said, you know, he's got the hell of a wealthy father, He, in many ways, you'd think someone like him would be the last person to go on a spree shooting. But, turns out, you know, it's like, the world is a lot crazier than we thought it, every time we think the world can get crazier, it does.
And this seems as like what you said with the beginning, would you say that, like, spree shootings are symbolic of sort of the final decline of civilization?
Spree shootings and a whole bunch of every other degenerate bit in the news. I mean, I'm postal, but it's like, you know, the typical leftist argument in response to spree shootings is that spree shootings are a relatively recent invention. Mark Ames pointed out, they're advocating take relatively recent phenomena. You know, I mean, the gun coming from a certain societal malaise or attitude that nobody wants to deal with.
And what's basically happening is, the society, there is a massive decline, and I know with Elliot Rodgers, economics wasn't the issue, but you see a decline, a lot of people, a decline in status, both social and economic, but at the same time, there's a culture where people are expected to live up to certain materialistic standards.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, this comparison has been made before, but America is in many ways going the same way as Brazil. Like, you know, we have a top class of extremely wealthy people, and below that, you know, is living in the favelas. And, you know, the Brazilian elite is so despised by the peasants that they have to fly around in helicopters, because if they try and get around on the ground, the favela goers anarchy.
You did a book, I forget the name, but it's called Enjoy the Decline, or?
Enjoy the Decline by Aaron Clary, yes. Basically, the whole thesis behind Clary's, fully, that basically the United States is lost. Like, in 2012, we had an opportunity, I mean, objectively, Obama has not been a good president, okay? He has screwed up, hasn't done much. But I mean, when it comes to, you know, Gitmo's still open, torture's still going on, he's ordering drones to, you know, shoot people without a warrant, spying. Yet, even with all this, Obama still got reelected. So, Clary's idea is that, it's like, if Obama's first term wasn't enough to convince people that he should have been out, the whole country is gone, and there's really nothing we can do as political individuals, but as individuals, we can still enjoy life and still enjoy, and still basically have a good time. You know, it's like, political action is pointless. Focus on yourself as an individual. That's his thesis.
Yeah, and even in those countries, like you mentioned, like Brazil. I mean, there's people there. Even in those countries, people manage to enjoy life, and have a good time. You don't have to be. Just because society is declining, you don't have to, it's not necessarily to, for everyone to be all miserable.
Oh yeah, pretty much. I mean, I think a lot of it is that in the United States, compared to, I mean, I'm not the most experienced world traveler, but in many ways, the United States, for all of its, is a lot less free. For example, in, say, a country like Brazil, you can drink out in the open and nobody cares. We have, in the United States, we have oppressive drinking laws, oppressive smoking laws. A few months ago, New York City, from what I understand, New York City has, one of his parting shots, Bloomberg, raised the minimum smoking limit in New York City to 21. You have to be 21 years old to smoke in New York City now. We got laws here. And it was like, we're living in the perfect, Sam Francis described as anarcho-tyranny, which we have a government that is, letting crime go around unchecked, and in the case of Elliot Rodgers, like, many ways to stimulating this sort of thing. Yet at the same time, if you want to be an ordinary citizen, you can't do anything without a million government regulations coming in to screw you over. You can't start a business, you can't do this, you can't do that.
And, what I was thinking about Elliot Rodgers is, I recently interviewed Andy Nowicki about, this Malignant Mirage.
Mm-hmm.
But I was kind of teasing him, I was saying, you know, Elliot Rodgers reminds me a lot of one of the characters in your books.
Yeah, I was gonna say, he's like the real life Tony Meander. Which is the protagonist from, Nowicki's Pilgrim. I mean, there are obviously some differences there, but it's like something out of one of his books. That's just eerie.
Yeah, totally. It was very eerie. I mean, Andy Nowicki's, I don't know this, but he's probably gonna end up writing a book about, based on Elliot Rodgers at some point.
Mm-hmm. The story basically writes itself at this point. You know, it's like, reality is getting to the point where it's stranger than fiction. You know, it's like, you know, when I first read The Columbine Pilgrim, it was like, it's a great book, but I was just shocked by both the violence and the general depravity of things. I mean, Nowicki does it in a very classy way, and it's like, even with all that, it's like, I had difficulty imagining that this could happen in real life, but here we are.
And the other thing is, Andy Nowicki is not a mainstream writer. He's someone who would be considered a fringe writer by the mainstream.
Yeah, pretty much. So it's like, the only honest treatment we're getting on these subjects is coming from people who are so-called fringe. Which I say is another point of decline, because the so-called mainstream artists, media, whatever, have almost no bearing on reality. When they aren't outright lying, they're just sticking their hands in the sand and pretending that it's something other than it is.
And you did, and if you look at the mainstream responses to Elliot Rodgers, what are some of the most, insane ones that you've seen so far from the mainstream media?
The most shocking thing I've seen is all of the people denying that he was mentally ill. I mean, this is not maybe straight mainstream, but this is mainly coming from feminists. The other day I watched a video from this British radical feminist who claimed, well, she said, they're claiming that Elliot Rodger was mentally ill, and as someone with a mental illness, I find this offensive. Basically, these people are so far gone that they think that so-called misogyny is the primary motivator and the only motivator, as in any man could, if he was feeling sufficiently misogynistic, would pick up a gun and start shooting people, which suggests that either these people are so far gone into their ideology that they can't, that they've completely disconnected from reality, or they're just so, or as this woman give it away, you know, it's like she claims that he's mentally ill and that she feels personally slighted when the media claims that, Elliot Rodgers' mental illness was what drove him to this. You know, it's like, they're so, I think the term, is PC politically correct? Bet too, not strong enough here, but there's something wrong there. That's probably the most, I'm just stunned by that. The whole denial that he was mentally ill.
What is your response to the allegations of him being influenced by the Manosphere? I know he was involved with a site called, P-Way Hate.
Well, that is probably the most, that's another brazen example, in that POA hate stood for everything that the Manosphere stood against. And in fact, the POA hate was actively, in, as I wrote in the Techies magazine, members of POA were actively involved in harassing, in many cases criminally harassing members of the Manosphere. For example, a few months ago, one of their members hacked Roosh's forum for the sole purpose of trying to find his IP address, and then attempting to get violent Polish neo-Nazis on Roosh, which is obviously hacking something is illegal. They were also, quote-unquote, trying to figure out dig up the personal information of Manosphere writers who write under pseudonyms. They were trying to track down the girlfriends of these writers on Facebook and harass them. So, POA Hate's guiding philosophy was a hatred of the Manosphere, a hatred of pickup artists, a hatred of the seduction community. And their belief was that, basically, unless you're good-looking and get reconstructive surgery, you'll never be able to get laid, which is, and then in many ways they felt entitled to women, whereas the Manosphere, or the guiding philosophy of the Manosphere is that, if you want a wife, you have to be the man. You have to get in shape, you have to be a interesting guy. It's like, and you get to ridiculous extremes, like Caitlin Dewey of the Washington Post used the literal phrase in her article, the pickup site POA Hate, which is, even if you don't know anything about the things that we're discussing here, that sentence is a logical contradiction all on its own. It's like they're not even trying to disguise the fact that they have an agenda.
Well, aren't a lot of those guys in POA Hate, did a lot of them... Aren't they, like, a lot of them were failed pickup artists? I mean, even Roosh admits that a game isn't for everyone, but you have guys in there and they've spent, like, thousands of dollars on these, pickup artist seminars.
That's true, but, here's the thing, last week on my own podcast, I interviewed a friend of mine, Kid Strangelove, who used to post, he's part of the Manosphere, he used to, read POA Hate. He claims that when it started about 5-6 years ago, it legitimately was about exposing scammers in the seduction community. People who would charge you thousands of dollars for a boot camp, but you wouldn't get anything out of it. But ever since then, for whatever reason, I'm assuming because the site was just so poorly moderated, that just started attracting people who, were just hateful and just wanted to do nothing more than harass people, harass Manospherians, harass anti-feminist writers, in many ways, like, in the Tacky Mag article, I described the POA Hate as 4chan, but without the sense of humor or self-awareness. It's basically a bunch of people who just want to commiserate about how miserable they are and try to make other people's lives miserable. It's like, there's legitimate criticism, but hacking someone's website just so you can try and get them gang-stalked by neo-Nazis is not legitimate criticism. That's harassment, and it's wrong by anyone's definition.
And I guess we touched upon Andy Nowicki, but I'm curious, you reviewed Andy Nowicki's latest book, This Malignant Mirage.
Mm-hmm.
I recently interviewed him about it, but I'm curious, what's your take on it?
I described it basically as like, it's erotic literature, but for people who don't like erotic literature.
You personally didn't find it arousing.
I thought it was a good book, I just didn't think it was arousing, which is sort of Nowicki's M.O. It's like, he handles eroticism and sex in a very, very unusual way, a very Catholic way. And I think it's more interesting than typical quote-unquote erotica writing, I don't want to get crass or anything, no one's going to be enjoying this in the way that you would enjoy typical erotica. You'll enjoy the book, you just won't enjoy it like that.
And I think what we were saying is like, it's a similar theme to Elliot Rodgers, because there, a lot of the characters are so, they're tormented by sexuality. Like, one of the characters, he is so tormented by sexuality that he blackmails his therapist that he says that he's going to commit suicide if she doesn't let him rape her.
Yeah, and you get, yeah, that theme is pretty much present throughout the entire book. I mean, I forget the exact name of the story now, but one of the more affecting stories in the book was about a writer who was a virgin when he married his wife. It's implied that his wife had other lovers before meeting him. It's not ever explicitly stated. And their marriage has unraveled to the point where she's openly contemptuous of him, and she finally comes up and threatens him, if you don't have an affair, I'm divorcing you. So the next day out, he comes back home and he tells the story that we don't know whether this story is true, the story of how he seduced this, like, Estonian girl in his college class, and then she starts getting alternately offended but aroused at this. You know, it's like, it takes like a situation that most men might think is ideal, like, oh yeah, your wife wants you to have sex with other women, but it flips it on its head to where it becomes, you know, not a good thing, but it's like a good thing, but it's a threat hanging over this guy's head. You know, the theme of this malignant mirage is how basically people use sex to manipulate each other, and
And I forget if it was you or Andy, but you were saying that story was similar to that this Kevin Smith movie from the 90s.
That was me, Chasing Amy. Yes.
Oh yeah, Chasing Amy. Yeah.
Yeah, in many ways, because again, you have the same scenario of a man who's with a woman who is more sexually experienced than him, and he has difficulty dealing with it. I mean, Chasing Amy's not that great of a movie, but it has some interesting thematic implications.
And do you see that a lot of... how significant do you see that theme of being as a man saying marrying a woman who has a lot more sexual experience?
Well, the problem with something like that is, like, this is the approach both in Nowaki's Running and Chasing Amy. He's like, anyone who ends up in that situation is gonna feel any man who ends up in that situation is gonna end up feeling inadequate for many reasons, because, you know, it's like, as the man, you're supposed to be, you know, the leader, and if you come and find out, and in many cases, obviously, you get, like, every so often, you'll get, like, on Reddit or someone, like, a guy discovering that his wife has had way, way, way more sex than, you know, he thought she would. Or there's this one particular story of a guy who discovered that 10 years ago his wife was doing porno videos. Like, really disgusting, like, threesomes and stuff. Yet, I mean, again, I don't want to get crass. This wife,
like,
now
the type of stuff Bell Knox was in.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Ever since then, this wife has been very prudish and won't even, don't want to get crashed, she won't even go down on him. He was feeling heartbroken, not just because, you know, when she was younger, she gave herself to all these men in a very free way, but with him, she's very uptight and prudish. I'm not going to, like, say it will doom any marriage or relationship, but it's something that's going to cause problems down the line. It's like, and if nothing else, well, that's the spirit that Naoki captured in that story.
Yeah, and I noticed with your current Matt Forney blog, you're more focused on self-improvement, but this kind of stuff, it reminds me of your old Amalafita blog.
Yeah, pretty much. I don't write about it much anymore because I really don't have anything more to say, but yeah, I don't want to get specific, but I have been in that situation before. It's like, when I'm writing in my real name now, it's like, I don't want to, like, get too personal, but, it's not a fun situation to be in, because you feel inadequate, you feel betrayed in many ways, again, I don't want to say that no relationship like that can ever work. It's just, you know, it's going to be an uphill struggle.
And how common do you think? Do you think it's a fairly common phenomenon?
I think it's way more common. I just think the big difference is that most women will just straight up lie about it. Like, again, you'll see, I would point you to a specific link, but there are so many stories like this, like, to the Dear Prudence column at Salon, or these, like, Ask Aunt Amy whatever, and, like, you know, the Daily Mail or whatever, which a woman will write in, say, oh, I had a lot of fun when I was in university, and I hooked up with, like, 40 guys, but now I got this one guy, that was 20 years ago, and I've got this guy now I'm really in love with, and he asked me how many people I've had sex with, and I lied down to 10. Should I be honest about how many men I've had sex with? And without fail, the woman will always say, no, it's none of his business, and really, you know, it was your life back then. But it's like, you can't just wallpaper it over like that. It's like, these are issues that, I think it's way more common, and like I said, the only reason that it isn't more widely known is because, again, women will just straight up lie about it.
I think a lot of, excuse me, men, they feel almost emasculated.
Pretty much, that's the perfect word, exactly. It's like, you know, couples marrying, it's like the phrase that Royce or Hartiste uses, you know, alpha fucks beta bucks. Like, when these girls were like 18, 20, they would do anything with any guy, but like, now that they're 30 and they're past their prime in terms of looks, they are very uptight and won't even be honest about this. So, you know, not only do you have that element of emasculation, you just have that plain dishonesty, you know, and you're trying to build a relationship on that, and I think it's not fertile ground on which to build a long-standing marriage or whatever.
Yeah, it's a relationship based on lies.
Pretty much, yeah, and like I said, it's a lot more common than we think it is, and again, the only reason we don't know more is because A, women lie about it, and B, a lot of men aren't good at detecting when women are lying like this, or they don't want to, some guys probably don't want to ask the question because they're afraid of the answer.
Or the guys who are good at detecting it are more experienced themselves.
Yeah, pretty much. I think that's why you get, like, a lot of guys who have, like, had a... I think it's how a lot of older guys, like, get just totally jaundiced off marriage. You know, it's like, the guys who are experienced in that regard is, like, eventually, I mean, you maybe not think that all women are whores, but it's, like, enough of them are that it's, like, it's very, you know, in many ways you'll be rolling the dice. I mean, I'm not 100% on the whole no marriage thing, but I can understand why some people would come to that conclusion.
So, yeah, and I mean, even some of them, you're probably not going to like to hear this, but I would say, because of issues like this, there is some overlap between the manosphere and sites like PUA Hate in that regard, because that's the kind of thing you would expect to hear in PUA Hate.
Yes, you are right. I mean,
there's some overlap.
There is going to be some overlap, just, you know, not 100%, like, or not 100% like everyone else is claiming, yes.
And there's, I know, Matt, I was gonna say Matt Forney, no, not you, Matt Parrott. He writes, he's more of like a traditionalist who wants to restore traditional monogamy.
Mm-hmm.
But he had an article over at Traditional Youth about Elliot Rodger, and he was kind of like joking. If Elliot Rodger waited, he could have found a nice 30-something woman with a lot of mileage in her.
Well, that's the thing, is like, this is an extremely unnatural arrangement for maybe not for people across the globe, but it's very unnatural from a Western standpoint to expect women to just, you know, or just anyone to sort of screw around in their youth and then go, well, by the time they're in the 30s, you know, settle down right there. I mean, the blogger, the social pathologist, socialpathology.blogspot.com, he's done extensive studies on this, basically showing that the more sexual partners a woman has, the more likely she's going to divorce her husband when she does get married. And not only that, the drop off from zero sexual partners, you know, the woman being a virgin when she marries, to just having one sexual partner before you married, it goes from the likelihood of divorce shoots way up, and then from two to anything more than two, you're pretty much statistically screwed. It's like, We don't want to deny the fact that basically, you know, I mean, I believe this is true of men's cases, but not to the great extent to women, but it's like, when you screw around in your youth, you're pretty much, and you put off the idea of marriage, or like, oh, I'll do it when I'm ready to settle down, but, if you do, that entire attitude will basically doom your marriage, because, you will not be you ultimately won't be satisfied with who you settle down with, you know, And the mainstream media just says, like, oh, it's okay. And if you're a man and you're worried about, you know, what, you know, the woman, the wife, your wife, screwing guys before you, you're just a misogynist, you know, you're just insecure and you need to man up or whatever. It's like completely denying.
Yeah, the whole man up thing. I like your article you wrote, like you said, you said men should man up, but man up for themselves.
Yeah.
Social conservatives like Bill Bennett. And basically the whole mainstream social conservative movement is saying the same thing.
Pretty much. I mean, many ways conservatives in the United States have become the left, the right flank of leftism, in that they are now...
Yeah, they're basically like feminism without the abortion.
Yeah. Abortion and gay marriage and the issues they care about is like they welcome in the they welcome in the single mothers, and they expect girl power ideas in their daughters' heads. You know, they inflate the standards of young women in churches to the point where again I hate to use the term hypergamy, but you get a similar situation that you do in the secular world. The only real difference is that instead of, you know, sleeping around a million times, most of these girls just, you know, have such high standards that they end up, you know, 30s, 40s, unmarried, you know.
And have you seen that Roosh article where Roosh is like telling guys in the manosphere, stop using the term hypergamy, it makes you sound like a total nerd?
Pretty much, yeah. That's why I try not to use it too much, but it's like, it is a real concept, you know. You know, it is a real idea.
But how do you explain it without sounding like a total nerd?
I haven't figured it out yet. I mean, this may sound nerdy, but it's like, I met up with a few guys back in New Orleans from Mardi Gras, like, they were all pronouncing it wrong. They were pronouncing it hypergamy, and I was like, no, it's hypergamy, the emphasis is on the middle syllable. So that's sort of, I guess that sort of explains where I am, but...
My policy is basically, I think that terminology is fine when it's written in an article, just don't say it in, like, your day-to-day life.
Oh, yeah, God, yes, exactly. This is probably the first time I say it in
like,
months.
Don't say it, especially if you're in college with around a bunch of, like, guys in college. That's big no.
Nope, yeah.
So, yeah, you have a book out called Trolling for a Living, and this is basically a collection of some of your best articles from your old blog.
This is the best of collection of articles I wrote for the first year of MattForney.com from 2002 to 2013. And the title was a joke because like a couple months before, someone like accused me of trolling for a living. So I said, hey, you know what? I'll just run with it because I couldn't think of anything funnier. One of my writing inspirations, idols, is my friend Trevor Blake. He's sort of on the fringe of this internet, but he told me years ago, every time you write something down and you think it's quality, you have to get it down on paper, because paper is the only, even with all the digital technology, you know, it's like paper is the only lasting measure of permanency. So if you want to preserve your writing for years to come, you have to put it down on paper. And my mentality on releasing these best of collections is that, you know, it may seem somewhat egotistical for someone who's only been blogging for a year to write a best of collection, but it's here to, you know, make sure that even if my site goes down or I die next year, you know, this archive of writing will still exist.
So how do you define it? I know the term troll is used a lot online. What is your personal definition of a troll?
My personal definition of a troll is someone who starts shit just to start shit. It's like, I mean, or to put it in a more less crass fashion, someone who basically tries to provoke people for no other reason than because they, you know, enjoy it. I mean, and to a certain extent, you know, it's like, I will admit that I've done that in the past, and I've honed my writing style in a certain way that it will incite liberals, incite leftists, but I don't troll in the sense, I believe everything I write, or at least, I'm sincere about it when I wrote it. I reserve the right to change my opinion in the future, as most normal people do, but it's like, I'm serious. I mean, I'm not just some joker, you know, it's like, I'm trying to advance serious ideas, perhaps in an unserious way.
So you're not trolling just for the sake of trolling.
No. I'm advancing ideas, you know, but I'm just doing it in a certain way to entertain people.
So, Matt, before I wrap up the show, is there anything else you'd like to add about any one of these topics?
No, I think we covered pretty much everything.
All right, that was Matt Forney. Thanks again for being on.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Robert.
That's all we have for today's show, so take care, and we'll be back with you next time.